Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
It's about the cross. It's about my sin.
Cross is the reigning theme from one end of the Bible to the other. There's no Christianity without the cross. There's no answer to anything without the cross.
Christ died, and his death is sufficient for my sin, and I will spend eternity with him in glory.
Don't look to material blessings as evidence or token of God's love. Look to the cross.
You want to understand what the love of God is all about? You don't need to open up a theological dictionary. You simply look at Calvary. It's at that place that the love of God was most radically put on display. There is where you define the love of God. For God so loved the world that he gave his one and only Son.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Today's word is excruciate. Do you know what the word excruciate means? Hello. Today is the day that our God died. It is Good Friday. And it is good, and yet it is horrific. It is horrible, and yet it is beautiful. It is all of those things and way more, all wrapped into one. It was excruciating. In fact, we get the word excruciate from the cross. It's a Latin word, ex, out of, cruciate, cross, out of the cross. When you think excruciate, you think horrible pain. No better personified, exemplified than on the cross. That is how somebody died on a cross in excruciating pain. Our God died today. What happened there? Today, we are going to fix our eyes on our God, on Jesus, the author, the perfecter of our faith, as Hebrews tell us, who for the joy set before him endured the excruciating cross, scorning its shame, and then he sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. What happened that day on the cross? If you can understand what happened that day on the cross 2,000 years ago, your life will never be the same. I'm telling you, this is the core issue. This is it. This is everything. Let's go back. Let's go way back in time and figure out what happened there. The crucifixion of Jesus Christ was prophesied 700 years before it actually happened, that this person would be beaten, would be hideous in his appearance because he was throttled so badly at the hands of man, and that he would be dying a horrible death. And it pleased God to do that. It pleased God to do that to Jesus Christ. Why? Why did it please God to see somebody suffer, his own son suffer so horribly? It's because he hates sin. God poured out his anger and his wrath that day on his only beloved son. Why? He hates sin. As much as you can hate or as much as you can love anything, you do not understand and comprehend how much God hates sin. God kills people for sin. He can whack them on the spot, and if nothing else, he's going to kill them and send them to hell forever. That's how much he hates it. Does hell go on forever? You better believe it does. It's what it says. It's everlasting torment. Well, that seems mean. Well, you don't understand how much God hates sin. He hates it a lot. And no better example do we have of God's hatred for sin than that day on the cross. You see, God gave a set of rules. They're called the Ten Commandments. It's his perfect representation of his perfect character and his nature. For you to go to heaven with God, you got two ways of getting there. First way, keep those Ten Commandments, be perfect. You done that? Have you kept those Ten Commandments? Yeah, you haven't. Guess what? God, the just judge of all the world, is going to judge all people according to what they have done. And he is going to pour out his anger and his wrath on everyone who practices evil deeds, who refuses to repent, and who lives for themselves. There will be trouble and calamity on that day because he hates sin. Your little white lie, God sees all lies as sin. You can mask it, you can package it, you can put a little pretty bow on your white lie, and God hates it, and he'll send you to hell in a heartbeat for that one sin. If you're being honest with yourself, you got way more than one. He hates it. He hates it. Now, there's another way you can get to heaven if you haven't kept those commandments. You can have somebody satisfy God's anger, his just, righteous anger, because he's going to pour out his anger on you, or he could pour it on somebody else. Somebody else could pay the fine for you, just as if you were standing in a courtroom and the judge, the just judge says, I have found you guilty. You are an offense to the state. You are an offense to the laws. You've offended me with your behavior and your careless attitude toward the law. And I'm going to send you away forever. I have the right, I have the authority, I have the power, and I am right for doing it. But instead of doing that, he stands up, walks off of the bench, takes off his robe, wraps it around you, and says, but I'm going to pay the fine for you. I'm going to pay the fine for you. It's exactly what Jesus Christ did 2,000 years ago. He came down from heaven, the just judge who will judge you someday, came down from heaven and said, I'll pay the fine for you. And he took the anger and the wrath that God should pour out on you, and he poured it out on his only begotten beloved son, Jesus Christ. That's what happened. God hates sin, but amazingly, because he loves you and he loves me, and I can't figure out for the life of me why. I cannot figure out for the life of me why. Think of those secret sins. Think of the stuff that goes on in your brain. Think of the stuff that you've thought about. How's about the time you spent on the internet? How's about the thoughts when that babe walked by at the office? How's about, madam, watching that soap opera? How's about just those thoughts alone? And yet, somehow, despite all of that, he says, I love you so much, I'm going to come down off of my bench and I'm going to take the punishment to satisfy my judgment, my justice, my laws will be filled. Justice will be satisfied because I'm going to pay the punishment for you. That is the message of the cross. And if you do not know it and your walk has been in and out and hot and cold, you don't get it. There's two things you must remember. God hates sin, but he loves you. And there's no better place to understand that. There's no better place to get a handle on that than to go to the cross 2,000 years ago. This day, Good Friday, when Jesus Christ, God himself, died for you. What happened there? I want you to consider, before we get to the cross, the health of Jesus Christ. Most people think that Jesus Christ, you know, blonde-haired, blue-eyed, 6 feet tall, wrong. Probably, according to these people who go back and they figure out based on the size of the skulls of people who lived that time, their bones, Jesus would be considered short in our day, average in his day, about 5'2". That's it. Short hair, dark hair, probably curly, and not a good looking man, because the Bible tells us there was nothing beautiful about him, nothing to attract us to him, nothing, boy, in our day and age when we get so attracted to the good looking people, nothing about him. Average looking fellow. I'm telling you something else. He was a man. He was a man's man. He was a carpenter. He was in not only good health, but he was strong. He walked a lot. He was in good shape, and he was tough. That was our Jesus. He had to have been for what he endured. You need to know, the night before he was crucified and the morning that he was crucified, he was forced to walk 2.5 miles in chains around town. When was the last time you went walking 2.5 miles? You were pooped, weren't you? After 2.5 miles... man, you're done. Jesus did it without sleep and with a whole lot of stuff going on his brain. Luke 22:44, and being in anguish, he prayed more earnestly, and his sweat was like drops of blood falling to the ground. When Jesus was in Gethsemane before his trials began, he was stressed. He entered this day healthy, but he begins it stressed. With a stress that you and I can't get it. The only place in the King James Version of the Bible where the word agony is used, right here. And the Greek word for agony, you should know, means to be engaged in combat. So Jesus is engaged in combat about what he is going to go through, and go through what he does. You need to know that when the Bible says that he sweated great drops of blood, it's true. Let me give you two examples of this happening. The medical term for it is hemohidrosis. Here's how it works. The capillaries around the sweat pores become fragile and leak blood into the sweat. A case history is recorded in which a young girl who had a fear of air raids in World War I developed the condition after a gas explosion occurred in the house next door. Here's another report. A nun who, as she was threatened with death by the swords of the enemy soldiers, quote, was so terrified that she bled from every part of her body and died of hemorrhage in the sight of her assailants. It happens. And it was happening to Jesus because he was in agony. He was in combat. There was a spiritual war going on. He was stressed. And then he was walking. Have you ever been called before a judge? Speeding ticket, whatever. You go to that room. Man, you sit there sick to your stomach, don't you? That's over a speeding ticket. That's over a misdemeanor. Nothing. Oh, something worse. Maybe they're going to send you to jail. Nothing compared to the trial that Jesus was facing. This was life or death. And he knew it was death. And he knew the type of death. walking. He's stressed. He's sweating drops of blood. He's standing in trial, multiple trials, by the way. And after Pontius Pilate has said, which do you want, Jesus or Barabbas? And the crowd screams, Barabbas, had to break his heart. Do you remember Jesus Christ just a few days earlier came riding into Jerusalem from the Mount of Olives on a colt, humbly, in peace, a king? People were cheering him. They were applauding for him. Josephus says there might have been over 2.5 million people in Jerusalem at the time of the Passover. So when Jesus came entering in and they praised him and they threw palm branches before him and sang hosannas, it could have been hundreds of thousands of people. And what was Jesus doing? Crying for people he loved who refused him, who didn't get it. The people who were singing his praises, they didn't get it. They were wanting a political king, and it was breaking Jesus' heart. The night culminates now with the people screaming, give us that thug. Heartbreaking. And so he gets handed over to be beaten and crucified. We're going to continue taking a look at the excruciating death of Jesus Christ, because once we get this, everything changes, and it happened 2,000 years ago today on Good Friday.
Hey, thanks for listening to Wretched Radio today. You know that moment when you're scrolling through your news feed on social media and everything just feels upside down? Yeah, that's the culture we're living in right now. But you know what gets me excited? At Fortis Institute, we're not just watching on the sidelines. We've assembled a team of incredible voices who are diving deep into God's Word every single day. I'm talking about Dr. John Krotz helping you integrate theology into real life, or Dr. Adam Tyson, who is speaking truth into young men's hearts, or Pastor Brad Bigney transforming marriages from surviving to thriving. But here's the thing, while we're standing strong, that's what Fortis means, by the way, we need gospel partners who'll stand with us. People who will look at the culture and say, you know what? The church needs more than just encouragement. It needs equipping. We're not starting something new at Fortis. We're strengthening something vital. And so if you're ready to join us in this mission, if you're ready to help us equip believers with truth that transforms, then head over to fortisinstitute.org right now to find out how to become an ongoing monthly gospel partner. Wretched. Amazing grace. Amazing gospel.
Perhaps you've been wondering, is there a Christian university that isn't woke or that hasn't compromised on important biblical doctrines like, you know, the age of the earth? There is. It's the Masters University in Southern California. Beautiful campus, all of the athletics and activities that you've come to expect from universities. But it's more than that. The academic programs are most excellent, preparing students for the future. The Washington Post just said, number 6 for preparing students for the real world. All that, plus the Masters University isn't woke, and it is thoroughly biblical. Would you like to learn more? I encourage you to visit the Masters University at masters.edu/wretched, masters.edu/wretched.
You've most likely been there, sitting across from a therapist, staring at their degrees on the wall, listening while they give you a diagnosis and tell you what pill and prescription they think are going to cure all your ills. You walk out of the office carrying a label, and you wonder why you feel even heavier than you did before you walked in. That's why Dr. Greg Giffert wrote Lies My Therapist Told Me, because sometimes it's not the medication or even the diagnosis that's the real issue. It's that the whole system doesn't touch what's going on beneath the surface. Look, not every struggle is solved with a pill. Not every label tells the entire story. What if addiction's not just a disease? What if your anxiety is not just a chemical imbalance? And what if the diagnosis handed to your child is not the final word? The world gives its answers, but rarely does it ever deal with the heart. Scripture does. Pre-order Lies My Therapist Told Me today at fortisinstitute.org/lies. That's fortisinstitute.org/lies.
Titles of Christ. In the Bible, Jesus is given many titles that teach us about who he is and what he has done. Jesus is called the Mediator. God is holy and cannot have fellowship with sinful men. But Jesus is both righteous man and holy God. And through him, we have direct access to God. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Hello, this is Good Friday Day. We have to focus on the cross. If you can get this, your walk will change. It'll never be the same. I guarantee it. We're going back. Let me share with you some doctors. I do need to give a great deal of credit to one doctor, David Tarasaka. He's a doctor who took a little look into what happened historically with the scourging, with the beatings, and with the crucifixion and how somebody died. Crucifixion was an art. They got good at it. They got real fine at it. Let's go to this doctor's report about this. He says this. They used a flagellum. You were stripped. You were completely naked. By the way, can you imagine more shame than being naked in front of your mom, your best friends, your family? Imagine the shame. And there's Jesus, King of Kings, Lord of Lords, stripped naked in front of a bunch of sadomasochists. I wonder how much mocking went on right there, right then. But these guys stepped up. They used something called a flagellum. You were tied to a post, which left your back entirely exposed. And then the flagrum or the flagellum, it was small pieces of bone and metal attached to a number of leather strands. The cat of nine tails is what they called it. Now, the number of blows that Jesus took is not recorded in the Gospels, but it is pointed out in Deuteronomy chapter 25, verse 3. The number of blows was set at 40, but later reduced to 39 to prevent excessive blows by a counting error. The victim often died from the beating. 39 hits were believed to bring the criminal to, quote, one from death. Roman law, however, didn't put any limits on the number of blows given. According to Josh McDowell, during the flogging, the skin was stripped from the back, exposing a bloody mass of muscle and bone. Hamburger, according to one expert. It didn't get lacerated like Mel Gibson showed. It got ripped and it went through the muscles and their organs would fall out of their backs. That's what Jesus endured. And what do you think happened there? Extreme blood loss. Imagine how much you'd be bleeding if your skin was just entirely stripped off and the muscle. There was a ton of blood loss going on. So there he's stripped. They put a scarlet robe on him, put the old crown of thorns, put a staff in his right hand, knelt in front of him, mocked him some more, spit on him, and then took the staff out of his hands and struck him on the head and again. And then he was beaten by the Roman soldiers. Isaiah 56 tells us this. I offered my back to those who beat me, my cheeks to those who pulled out my beard. I did not hide my face from mocking and spitting. That was written 700 years before it actually happened. What individual could possibly control and make that happen? Couldn't. This was all predestined, all of it that we read about and that we celebrate. Isaiah 52:14. Just as there are many who were appalled at him, his appearance was so disfigured beyond that of any man, and his form marred beyond human likeness. He took a whooping. He got throttled by these guys whose specialty was pain. Severity of the beating was not detailed in the Gospels. However, the book of Isaiah, they pulled out his beard. Yo, have you ever even just pulled out a whisker? You ever done that? Pull a nose hair. That make you cry? How's about getting your beard pulled out of your face? What do you think that does to the skin? Beat him so much you couldn't even tell it was a human being. That's the type of beating that he took. All right, so now all of this has happened. He's been getting beat. He's been getting scourged with the flagellum, the cat of nine tails. He's got the crown, the hat of thorns on his head, and now he walks about 650 yards carrying, not the whole cross, but nonetheless, he carried something called the patibulum across his shoulders. It was just the crossbar. Weighed about 80 to 110 pounds in a situation, in a state like that. Can you imagine what that would be like? That's what he did. So he carried it. He carried it for 650 yards. And then he gets onto the cross. Let's take a look and see what happened there. Psalm 22, 16 and 17. Dogs have surrounded me. A band of evil men has encircled me. They have pierced my hands and my feet. I can count all my bones. People stare and gloat over me. The crucifixion was prophesied a lot in the Old Testament. You just heard it from Psalm 22. Take a look at Isaiah 52, 13. Says this, my servant will act wisely. He will be raised and lifted up and greatly exalted. And then in John 3, Jesus refers back to that he would be a fulfillment of that prophecy. Hey, that's supernatural. That isn't coincidence. You can't control that type of stuff. That's supernatural business going on there. Just as Moses lifted up the snake in the desert, so the Son of Man must be lifted up. All kinds of foreshadowing in the Old Testament fulfilled when Jesus Christ was nailed to a cross. Crucifixion site? we read, was purposely chosen to be outside the city walls because the law forbade such within the city walls for sanitary reasons. The crucified body was sometimes left to rot on the cross and serve as a disgrace, a convincing warning and deterrent to passers-by. Sometimes, the subject was eaten while alive and still on the cross by wild beasts. Let's get into the specifics. The procedure of crucifixion may be summarized as follows. Again, I do need to thank Dr. David Tarasaka for this medical information. The patibulum, remember that's the crossbar, was put on the ground and the victim laid on it. Nails about 7 inches long and with a diameter of one centimeter, that's about 3/8 of an inch, were driven into the wrists. Maybe higher up, maybe lower down, but they were nonetheless driven through the body, which, by the way, would be right in the vicinity, the area of the median nerve, causing shocks of pain to radiate through the arms. It was possible to place the nails between the bones so that no fractures or broken bones occurred. Studies have shown that nails were probably driven through the small bones of the wrist, since nails in the palms of the hand would not support the weight of a body. That's, by the way, why they tied those cords around his forearms, because sometimes otherwise it might rip. So it was a little extra support. Very thoughtful of them. In ancient terminology, the wrist was considered to be part of the hand. Standing at the crucifixion site would be an upright post called the stipes, standing about 7 feet high. Wasn't way up in the air, just barely off the ground. In the center of the stipes was a crude seat called a sedulum, which served as a support for the victim. The patibulum, that was the crossbar, was then lifted onto the stipes, and the feet were nailed to the stipes. To allow for this, the knees had to be bent and rotated laterally, being left in a very uncomfortable position. And then what was called the titulus was hung above the victim's head, and that's why we think that Jesus was hung on a T-cross. There were a lot of different shapes of cross. You had an X-cross, for instance, or you had one with the bar on top, the patibulum on top. Well, you couldn't hang something, that sign, the titulus, couldn't have gone above it, so we think that that's why it was a T-cross. Now, you should know this also. Recently, they've been finding some of these nails at crucifixion sites that are only so many inches long. They weren't long enough to actually go through a foot on top of another. You couldn't go through 2 feet and then be nailed in the wood. So they think now that instead of 1 foot on top of the other, they had them straddle the cross, and then the nails were banged through the Achilles. Physical suffering on the cross. Psalm 22, 14, 15. I am poured out like water and all my bones are out of joint. My heart has turned to wax. It is melted away within me. My strength is dried up like a potsherd and my tongue sticks to the roof of my mouth. You lay me in the dust of death. Don't know if you remember seeing Gracia Burnham being interviewed by whoever, Dateline 2020, whatever the special was, after she and her husband, or she was rescued, her husband was killed. Martin and Gracia Burnham, when they were acting as missionaries. And she described being thirsty. She said one of the worst things was being thirsty. She said, your tongue swells. You're consumed by thirst. You are so thirsty. I think we forget about the thirst. And when Jesus said, I thirst, I think the reason that was said, personally, is because it was a reminder of how excruciating thirst is. Horrible. Gracia Burnham said it was one of the worst things of the whole ordeal. You're consumed by it. You can think about nothing else. Let's go to the cross, though. Again, according to the good doctor, having suffered from the beatings and flogging, Jesus suffered from severe hypovolemia, from the loss of blood. The verse about that Psalm 22, that describes dehydrated state and loss of strength. When the cross was erected upright, there was a tremendous strain put on the wrists, arms, and shoulders, resulting in a dislocation of the shoulder and elbow joints. The arms, being held up and outward, held the rib cage in a fixed and inspiratory position, which made it extremely difficult to exhale and impossible to take a full breath. Got asthma? You know what that's like? Can't get a full breath? You ever find yourself doing that? Just a suck in a big one so your lung, forget it. For 6 hours, not for Jesus, couldn't get a full breath. The victim would only be able to take very shallow breaths, which incidentally would explain why we just have those short statements from Jesus. As time passed, the muscles from the loss of blood, loss of oxygen, and the fixed position of the body would undergo severe cramps and spasmodic contractions. Death by crucifixion, according to the good doctor. Here's how it happened. Shallowness of breathing causes small areas of the lung to collapse. Decreased oxygen and increased carbon dioxide causes acidic conditions in the tissues. That's got to feel good. Fluid builds up in the lungs, and the heart is stressed, and it eventually fails. It's a slow, awful, torturous process. The worst. The absolute worst. So there hangs our Jesus, our God, having been beaten, punched, scourged, flogged, spat upon, had to walk, carry stuff, his back shredded on that rough cross, hanging there with nails through his hands, through his feet, struggling for breath. And Isaiah 53 tells us that it pleased God to do that because God hates sin, and yet he proves his love and dies for us while we were yet sinners. Let today be the day that grace becomes amazing. Get it today. Go to the cross.